Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of the values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
You're listening to the Laugh Button Podcast on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of the Laugh Button Podcast here on Riotcast, riotcast.com. I am Matt Kleinschmidt, your editor-in-chief of the Laugh Button, and also the only man rolling solo on this podcast today. Bram, our my usual partner in crime from MetalInsider.net, he fell ill. He got sick, and he's not in the office today, so it's totally fine, because I have so many updates for you guys going on this week. We are knee-deep in a ton of stuff on the site, a ton of stuff going on in our offices. So yeah, let's just jump right into it. Basically, this week, I have an incredible guest. Her name is Katie Goodman. Katie Goodman is a writer. She's a comedian. She's an improv. She's a theater actress. She's all this kind of stuff that you that kind of goes along with, like, basically the trade of performing arts. And she just released a new album called Halfway Closer to Dead. And basically, the album is about her being a total badass. A lot of the songs kind of have a fun feminist vibe to them. They have a fun comedy vibe to them. I actually said to her, "You remind me of a female version of Tim Minchin." She liked that comparison. It's an incredible conversation. We talk for about an hour about politics, feminism, comedy, how it all kind of overlaps and how it all kind of works post-Trump, the time that we live in. We talk about Obama and all that kind of stuff and kind of how it all works to her music and her comedy. It's actually a really, really great conversation. And I think it's kind of fitting that it comes on International Women's Day. By the time you guys are listening to the podcast, it'll be the day after that. So super excited to have her on the podcast. As far as some other house cleaning updates, we're at South by Southwest this upcoming week. We're going to be all over the place hitting all the comedy programming, and there's programming from Comedy Central down there. There's programming from True TV down there. CISO's down there. The Laugh Button's down there. Above Average is down there. UCB is down there. Basically, everyone you can think of is going to be in Austin, Texas in the next couple days doing some incredible things, but I want to tell you about our showcase. We are doing a showcase Tuesday night at 8 p.m., the Laugh Button Live. We're teaming up with the folks at Gotham Comedy Club, Nate Bargatze, Robert Kelly, Rich Voss, Mark Norman, Ian Edwards, a surprise super secret headliner we cannot announce, and Lisa Traeger's hosting the whole thing. It's going to be an incredible night, 8 p.m. On the 14th. If you have a South by Southwest badge, feel free to show up. Tell them I sent you. I'll be there, so you can actually say hi to me if you want to do that too. Also, we're going to be down there with, since we're going down with Bobby Kelly, our buddy from the Riotcast Network, he's putting together a live YKWD podcast taping at this festival. So he's going to be doing a taping earlier in the afternoon. He's going to have Tim Dillon on there. Al Madrigal's doing it. Voss is doing it. Lisa Traeger's doing it. So that's going to be a good time too. So we're going to be hanging out with Bobby the whole time while we're down there. It's going to be super awesome, super incredible stuff. I'm sure we'll have the whole recap, some comedians lined up. Definitely going to talk to some favorites, going to have some roundtable conversations, some great stuff planned for you. So super excited about hitting South by Southwest this year. It's festival season. It's awesome. So exciting. Great stuff going on. So, I mean, I don't want to burden down your time because I'm busy. You're busy. We have a great interview with Katie Goodman coming up. So we're going to duck out of the news a little bit early today. We're actually going to jump right into this interview with Katie. Here's Katie Goodman. Welcome back to the Laugh Button Podcast. I'm your editor-in-chief, Matt Kleinschmidt, and with me today, I have Katie Goodman.
Hello.
Hello, are you?
I'm good.
Good. I'm glad you're here because I think, I've kind of only known you as one thing, and then I took like a deeper dive into it. I'm like, holy shit, there's so much stuff going on here. So
I want to know what the one thing was.
The one thing was, this is going to sound weird. I kind of always thought of you in my head since I, for some reason, and I apologize in advance, I kind of always thought of you as a female version of Tim Minchin.
Oh, thank you. It's a huge compliment. I'll take it.
But at the same time, like, I feel like it's a little like, okay, just easily categorized.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
So I was just like, shit, I don't know if I should say this.
this to her, not to offend her in any way.
No.
So I took the deeper dive, you know. Well, I first saw you from your first album, which is you on top of a piano in a dress, looking thug as shit. It was awesome. And I was like, who is this? I got to do some research. So that's kind of how I first got to know you. And then the second album,
I'm back on top of a piano
in leather with a sword looking ready to like house somebody. So I was like, all right, we got a theme here too. How did you come upon like sitting on top of pianos looking thuggish?
I don't normally do that in my show though, because you can't play very easily.
No, I can't.
Although
imagine.
That would be a trick, like playing upside down and from above or backwards.
Hey, you know what? They play guitars behind their backs.
That's
why not?
That's right. Yeah. I'm going to try that.
I wonder if you can make that happen.
And people, when you go to travel to big, beautiful theaters with giant, gorgeous, black, you know, Steinway pianos, they don't really like you on top of their pianos.
Oh, I can only imagine. Yeah, so I can only imagine.
That's not a good plan. All right. Fuck that. Let's start over.
No, it's totally fine. Listen, stream of conscience. We're going wherever this interview goes. That's how this works. No take backsies, I guess. So the new album is called Halfway Closer to Dead.
Yes. Why?
Why? I guess is the first question I have.
So the song on there is about, there was just this sort of time in my life about a year ago, I started this hashtag for actresses called Say Your Age. And it was just like, come on, let's just all fucking say our age.
Yeah.
And then it will normalize what all these ages look like, you know, and it's also, I just started feeling kind of more bad. I'm 48. I wrote that when I was 47. Mm-hmm. And as karma would have it, 3 days later, I got my first part as a 50-year-old.
Okay.
So, my manager did not love that move. But what I love about this mm-hmm. age is you kind of give less of a shit all
yes,
the time.
Yes, yes.
And you're less competitive and you kind of know what your voice is by now. I know what I want to say. I know what I don't want to say. And also like what you're saying, you know, you don't have to be pigeonholed. You can, you have your, I hate all these words, but you have your brand, but then you get to do kind of what, okay, right now. So like, you know, a week ago I was, or 2 weeks ago, I was sick in bed and like everyone was in January and February. Yeah. And I wrote a song called, I've Got a Bad Case of the Trump. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of a little bit different from other things I'd done. And it was just about everybody.
I wonder
being,
what it's about.
Yeah. Everybody being sick because of, you know, going through all this. And so it's just like, you can kind of just write whatever you want, whenever you want at a certain point. You're not trying to prove yourself all the time. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I noticed that I'm 37.
Yes.
I'm almost 40. I just got married recently.
Oh, congratulations.
And there's just some things you just don't give a shit about at 37 that you did at 25.
Exactly.
Maybe
25 year olds say that too, about what they don't give a shit about when they're 18.
Hopefully.
I mean, that's the goal, right?
You grow and you evolve and you do some other stuff too. Yeah. So, I totally get that. And it's funny because like when you grow up, there's certain things that are just so important to you. Like for some reason had it in my head. I'm like, I'm going to check off and I'm going to die by the time I'm 30. No idea why. It was just this idea I had in my head of just like, I don't know, I'm going to live this reckless life. Yeah. It wasn't a reckless life. I don't know where I got in my head. I was the most vanilla person you ever met in your life. But I just had that in my head. And now, like, when I'm, like, 37, I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? Like, I'm a dumbass. And I would say this stuff to my parents. They would just look at me like I was a dumbass. And I like how you evolve and you grow. But I also think,
had this, like, rock image of what that means to die young, right?
Yeah, because I was a dumb
James
punk
Dean
rock kid.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just like, it's awesome, you know.
YOLO.
The kids today would use the phrase
YOLO. Hashtag
YOLO. Hashtag YOLO. Let's do it. Cool. So
my 14-year-old's like cringing listening to this. Right?
Probably. And that's actually something I didn't realize that you were a parent until I listened to the new record. 14-year-old.
Yeah. Yes.
Is a girl boy?
It's a boy.
Driving you nuts?
He's amazing.
Really?
He drove me nuts for 13 and a half years.
Okay.
And now it's awesome. I like how smart teenagers are. I've always liked teenagers. I used to teach a teen theater when I was younger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they're so subversive and interesting. Now, of course, that does suck when they're fighting you on something.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
But for the most part, I can kind of, maybe my husband's listening going like, yeah, right. But I kind of can step back and say, okay, he's supposed to be challenging us. Like,
yeah.
What would suck is
finding
if he weren't.
And all that
exactly. But like also just, you know, no, mom, that's just not how it is. Whatever the thing is. Actually, the only thing he could really do to rebel that would just really upset me is if he became like a young Republican or something like that. But he's so ingrained in his politics already, and he's so liberal. He's actually incredibly funny. And I grew up with newspaper people who were smart and funny on paper, but not there wasn't like, you know, witty banter around all the time, or pratfalls happening, which does happen in my house all the time. And friends, you know, all our comedian friends and actor friends come over, and they're just, nobody can just be normal. So my son's grown up with this, which of course is like a little nerve wracking, you know, because you don't want your kid to be the class clown, because that's the one who gets detention, right? So it's been kind of interesting seeing him growing up. And I don't think, like, I was actually really very funny till I was in my late 20s. You know, I think it took a while to kind of, I was an actor first. I didn't come up through comedy. I came up through theater.
Okay.
You don't even say come up through theater. I starved through theater or whatever. You know, and so that's a really different kind of a person. It's a different job. You know, like comedians are known for being sort of lone wolves. You know, there's a lot of other things we could probably say, but I love all my comedian friends. A little crazy, but they're crazy in a different way that we actors are crazy. So, but we're much more like, let's do the show all together. You know, it's a group project, right? So you have to be a little bit more social. And also the competition thing is really different. Like everybody's part's really different in a play. Or I have a sketch comedy troupe that tours internationally called Broad Comedy. So like for the four of us, we all have really different skills. And that's what I love. But, you know, I think, and I guess that's true on stage with stand-up, too, but there's a little bit more of that difficulty of going right after somebody who killed, you know? So I've never quite been, have to have that because I'm doing music, so it's a little bit
The collaborative spirit needs to be there a little bit more.
Yeah, in theater,
like,
yeah.
I know plenty of comics who are just like, no, man, it's my thought, it's my voice, it's this, that, and the other thing, and then it's hard to parlay that into something else, whether it be acting or, you know, some sort of improv troupe or something like that.
So improv is much more like theater, of course, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Because you're doing the solo improv show, which there are now.
I was actually just talking about this the other day with someone. It's just a completely different muscle you have to flex. It's like, because comedy, it's all about your thoughts. What do you think? How do you distill the world doing stand-up? And then, like, everything else, it's like, okay,
how am I reacting?
How are you reacting, or how are you losing yourself to be someone else's character?
Right. And it is like, how can I get that awesome line in?
Of course.
So there's some like competitive element of it too, but the idea is that you're really trying to support your teammates for the good of the whole.
And it's funny because actually, it just popped in my head because you have a whole song about aliens, basically, and Ripley, and she's moving shit around, I think is the title.
Move some shit around.
I'm sorry.
My husband actually wrote the words to that.
Really?
That's one of the only songs we've ever done where he wrote all the words and I wrote all the music. We usually are very collaborative, although I actually only do the music, but can I tell you the story of it?
Yeah, please do. That's why I asked.
So it was 5 days after the election, and we stupidly had planned to write an entirely new show that would open 9 days after the election.
Oh, okay.
So that was one of the worst moves ever. So, of course,
South Park did something very similar where they had a whole story written and then they had to change it in 24 hours.
So I know. It was fucking awful. Plus, you're home like crying into your laptop.
Yeah.
Some of us. And so we're like on an airplane headed to go do the final rehearsals for this thing. And he rewrote this whole song. So the song is basically, for listeners who haven't heard it yet, it's about in Aliens, Ripley, Sigourney Weaver, ends up on a military ship. And she goes up to the guys and she's like, you know, I want to help. What can I do? And they're like, I don't know. What can you do? Mm-hmm. And she says, well, I can drive that loader, that big mechanized suit.
It's an iconic scene.
An iconic scene, totally. And that's, well, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Aliens.
For a 30-year-old movie, spoiler.
She uses it at the end again, of course. But at any rate, so she does this sort of badass maneuver with it. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, she picks up this box. And she goes, where do you want it? Mm-hmm. And the guy, not snarky, but she was just, she knew she could do it. The guys laugh and they're like, you know, put it over there. And everybody loves that scene who's our age because they saw, sorry, I didn't mean to lump you with me, but you know, above 25, who saw it in their youth because it was like such an incredible scene where the guys didn't know that she could do that.
Yeah.
So my husband and I were like, I can't wait to show our kid
the
scene. And we get to it. Now, granted, he lives in Park Slope. Okay. And he's grown up with two feminists.
Okay.
But, you know, he turns to us and he goes, why did the guys laugh?
Just didn't register. Which is a good thing.
And that's what we were like, oh my God, it didn't occur to him that she couldn't fucking do that.
It's great.
Amazing. So on the airplane, after the first female candidate lost, Soren, sobbing in his chair, is writing this, what is one of our only not funny songs, about the hopefulness that this next generation just gets feminism, you know? So, and anyway, and so here we have this like big show. We're making everybody laugh, trying to pull them up from the election. And then wham, right? Second song to the end. We do this.
Yeah, because that's
like 700 people sobbing.
Even, I mean, like, even that song, like it totally has a flip about halfway through where you're just like, oh, I didn't expect it to go this way.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. I guess that's, you know, it's funny. Do you know Paul Provenza?
Yes,
he's
absolutely.
A good friend. And he, early on, when we started comedy, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, he mentored us a little bit. And he came to see one of our shows, and we're all late night sitting around this very effeminate B&B. He's a, you know, big, tough Italian, wonderful guy. And we're chatting till like 2 o'clock in the morning. I just remember we had our scotches on doilies. And he said, have you guys ever taken stand-up classes or comedy classes or anything like that? And we were like, no, we probably should do that. And he said, no, do not do that. He said, you guys instinctively know what you're doing from having done theater with other people's words, right? Like Christopher Durang or David Ives or whatever. For 15 years, we ran a theater company and we acted in 120 plays or something. Mm-hmm. And he said, you just know it. You take things in like a new direction. You know what callbacks are and reversals. And at the time, I didn't even know what a callback was and things like that.
You
and
just shook your head.
I was like, yeah, sure, Paul.
Totally.
And he said, don't fuck it up and go learn. So that was kind of an interesting thing to me because of coming to it so late. I think if you're 20, it probably really could help and save a lot of time. But that was always really interesting. And I've never taken a class. But the idea that you have to take something further. And actually, in that same conversation, there was one piece that didn't really work. And he said, look what you did. You wrote, the way he said it was, you wrote to this point, 2/3 of the way through, and then you stopped writing.
Yeah.
And you just finished the song the same way it had been. And we were like, oh, you know, it was such a great, of course,
like
I guess,
moment of clarity type of
thing. Yeah, it was such a moment. Yeah,
that's very cool. And getting back to the album, you know, just real quick, is like you start off the album. It's like with a feminist song. It's just like, you know, which is great. And I think
out of the gate
swinging, which I think is great because like I feel like there's always a controversy, an argument, a conversation of some sort about what is a feminist.
Right.
It seems like this generation defines it different than the generation before them, and probably the generation after them will define it completely different in a way.
And they're already starting to, actually, which is really interesting.
I just, you know, your take on it, it's so good. It's just like, yes, you are a feminist, and here's why, because here's the history of feminism, too. Like, I've definitely heard prominent, let's say, like, female celebrities say that, like, oh, I don't consider myself a feminist.
Right, well, that's what the song came from, is hearing these young women actresses say they're not feminist, and you're like, I'm watching your movie. And you are totally the heroine and taking charge and making decisions and having, you know, and hopefully complex emotions
and
not just one emotion of rage or something. And you're saving the fucking world and you're not. So it's just so confusing to me. Yeah. What I realized in sort of reaching the song. So basically the point of the song is, it's called Sorry Babe, You're a Feminist, which is, I'm sorry.
I should have set that up a little better for you, so I apologize.
It's just like, whether you think you are or not, you are, and here's why. And in researching that, it was really interesting. In fact, even there's been... So in researching that, it's been really interesting because there was a lot of people who were saying... They had a misunderstanding of the word or historically, or they had heard it used so negatively in the media that they don't want to be associated with that. And I don't blame them for that, you know. And also there's, you know, some situations in which they don't. I feel like some of the younger generations just don't have the perspective because they grew up with this and they don't actually need the women's movement the way that my generation before needed it, like desperately needed it. We'll see. What happens in the next 5 years? I mean, this word is going to come back.
It might, in a weird way, it might actually help.
I know.
You know what I mean? Which is weird to say.
Awful.
That.
But here's my basic line, and this is a little tiny bit in the song, but I always just sort of say this, which is all over the world, there's things like Iranian feminist movements, Central American feminist movements. Those in India, these women are getting wife burned, stoned, they can't go to school, blah, blah, blah. If they want to use the word feminist, then I think out of respect, the rest of the planet should.
Yeah.
Like, they're in shit.
Yeah.
You know? And we're just like, I mean, obviously, there's a ton of real, actual bad stuff going on in this country, of course. But but there's some sense of privilege. Like, I don't have to. I'm using the word humanist. I'm like, come on, you know.
Yeah, it's unfortunate though, because like I grew up with like strong women. My mom's a total badass. My wife's a total badass. Like, so it's just one of those things where I hear some people, and it's like, part of me wants to go, oh, you're just misinformed.
Yeah.
Or you've just.
I do that. I feel that too. Yeah.
But at the same time, like, who am I to say to a woman, oh, you're misinformed about this?
I think you say, I'm a feminist. First of all, just put on a shirt that says feminist or something like that. All like right. like Patrick Stewart does, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then, but I think it's
or
also
Nick
like.
Nick Offerman is right. Yeah, yeah.
Or it's, I think it's a little bit like saying all lives matter instead of Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
And that's fucking offensive too, right?
It is, yeah.
So I guess, I mean, first of all, I always feel like the group that is being oppressed gets to decide.
Yes.
But if the young women are being oppressed and they feel like they just don't like that word, it's complicated, but I was trying to make it funny
so that
they would maybe want to jump on board. I mean, the thing is, like, I didn't name any names in the song of who I was talking about. There's quite a few, but because I also was just like, I love those women actresses and I want them to embrace the word feminist because we're all sitting here waiting for them to use it.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny because like, I mean, I'll name names. I like the one that pops in my head instantly is Kaley Cuoco from The Big Bang Theory. Mm-hmm. She had mentioned that she wasn't a feminist in an article. I might be misquoting her, but I thought in my head, I'm like, you're one of the highest paid actresses on television. Yeah. You're making exactly
in
what your peers are.
In a sciencey, nerdy show.
Yeah. It's just, to me, it's like, you're absolutely a feminist, like just to kind of embrace it and like be that icon.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you have like an Emma Watson who is like, right now she's catching hell for like a Vanity Fair photo.
I know. It's so interesting. I really want to read her responses about it too, because she's so thoughtful.
And, yeah, very much so.
She's super smart, you know, but part of that I imagine too, is she just was like, I have to be an adult now and I have to brand myself as an, I don't know, I'm making this up completely, as opposed
it's
to Hermione.
Yeah.
So that's why, do you know what I mean? So she had to be like, I'm going to show a little boob, but she didn't even like, anyway, I'll be curious to see what she says about it, because I think her situation is super complicated.
It is, but I have five nieces.
Yeah.
I have a brother who, he and his wife have four, and my other brother has one, and like, some of the role models that they have, I'm like, come on.
Come on.
Be Ruth Bader Ginsburg, not Kim Kardashian. I say to them all the time, I'm like, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, not Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
And not that Kim Kardashian is a terrible person, but I feel like there's so much more you can achieve just by knowing that these things. And
I think they were just calling her hypocritical because she said something about Beyonce with the same thing. I mean, it's just, this is very, very complicated. And here's the bottom line for me.
Yeah.
Is all these women are turning against each other, the fans, and that's bullshit.
Yeah.
And they cannot do, you just can't do that. How can't we just say, we're all learning and growing, we're all trying to figure this out. Don't be so filled with rage about it. Let's have let's get Emma, Beyonce, and some other intellectuals on a panel and have a cool
conversation
about it.
Live streaming or something.
I know, as opposed to this whole, the Trump world we're in, and it's not just now, it's been for a while, but is tweets and sound bites, and it's awful. It's so bad for us. It's hurting us.
It's such a deeper conversation to unpack, and you can't do it in 140 characters.
Right, it really
is. So,
I do love Emma Thompson. I love Beyonce too.
I like them all. I think they're all. I would much rather have someone like grow up thinking Emma Thompson's like the best thing ever than just someone who is starving for screen time, willing to just say the most ridiculous stuff. Yeah. And there's male versions of the two that are just as bad. It's just like, but I think at the same time, like strong female, like I think about this all the time. One of my nieces, going back to my nieces, and they're all under the age of 10. She loves Star Wars.
Yeah.
Loves it. She's always loved Star Wars, which I think is great.
Yeah.
And like when they announced the new movie, was it Rogue One and the one before The Force Awakens, and they were both female leads. Yeah. I remember there being such a great big backlash about it. And the first thing I thought of is like, oh, that's so awesome for my niece. Because like she loves Star Wars so much, she can now see a female heroine swing a lightsaber.
Right,
I'm so psyched for her.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you kind of just got to step back sometimes and see this stuff.
Right,
and it's just unbelievable.
But what would the backlash even be? Just that they're pandering? or something?
The backlash is just like, oh, you know, why does it have to be? Why can't it be Luke Skywalker? Why can't it be a young Jedi?
Oh, it's just not even an interesting backlash. Okay, no, I thought you meant it was like complicated. Like,
it's not even interesting.
They're pulling a woman in because they have to have a woman or something.
It's not even interesting. Some of the
arguments. That's just totally not a surprise to hear that. But
it's terrible.
But you know what's interesting too? It's like all these young dudes, like my son and his friends and everything. Again, they didn't even bring it up. They're just like, let's go see the movie.
Yes. And I think that's good.
Yeah, it's great.
And I think it gives me hope because, like,
right.
I have peers who absolutely bitch about something. It's like, really? You, like, figure out how to pay your mortgage. Yeah. Like, there's other things to complain about. It's not for, but it's not for you anymore.
Right.
Your time with Star Wars was when the Ewoks were running around. It's 2014's version of Star Wars is not for you anymore. I'm sorry. Like, it's for your kids. Bring your kids. Yeah. But, you know, and then, I mean, I remember one of the biggest problems we had before Trump was just the fact that, like, the biggest argument everyone had was last summer, it was like, oh my God, there's an all-female version of Ghostbusters. And you would have thought, Michael Che made the best joke about it, was they do realize they're not taping over the original film. Which is the perfect place.
That's really great.
It's just like they realize that like it still exists and you
That's
can still
so funny.
Watch it.
Only somebody who had like cassette tapes would think of that. Shows his age.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
Awesome.
And I was like, all right, Michael Che for the win. That's the best answer, really best response. Great. But
I didn't, whatever. As a writer, the movie had some issues, but the comedic performances and Kate McKinnon can do no wrong.
Oh, she's great.
Oh
she's
my
great.
God. I mean, I was by myself in the theater, just like laughing incredibly loudly at her.
Because they weren't taping over the original.
Right.
They
did really different things, like also just totally, what is it called with the shit?
The proton packs?
No. The dude, the secretary.
Thor.
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 Okay.
Hemsworth.
Thank you.
Not Liam Hemsworth, the other one. Chris Hemsworth? Yeah. Chris or Liam? He has a brother too.
Oh, I think it's Chris.
I think it's Chris
anyway.
Too. Anyway, it's Chris. It's Chris.
Anyway,
I'll edit and post. If it's not, I'll be like,
but just the sexually harassing him stuff was just so funny because it's also, you know, it's Kristen Wiig, so it's like with a wink.
Yeah. It's a wink and a nod too. So I do think that a lot of like, and then like literally, so you follow up the feminist song and you go right into the song basically saying that if you're homophobic, you're gay.
Is that the second one on the album?
I think actually. I think it does roll right into that.
Just like,
so it's like 1-2 punch.
I just want to get rid of all the people who won't like me right away. Let's just not waste anyone's time.
Just get down to that core audience as soon as possible. But I think it's a great message because it's actually something I thought about quite often. It's just like the people that seem so anti this or so far leaning to one side, it's always like, for example, it's always the senator who is the most against, gay rights is the one that they capture, like with the wide stance in the bathroom from airport. It's always the way.
I think we mentioned 12 of those examples in the song.
Of course, because that's a great point. It's just, it's always that way. And then you see kind of what's happening now with like this constant attempt to erode certain civil rights happening post-Trump election. And you're just like, don't you have anything better to do? Like you look at a guy like
Mike. I just can't believe people care that much about other people's lives.
I don't know. Like, you look at a guy like Mike Pence, you're like, that guy is too well-groomed to not have a wide stance scandal in his past. I just look at that guy, I'm like, there's no way this guy hasn't been to a bathhouse or something.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, that Trump and his kid, like Ivanka and everything, she's pretty fine, pro-gay and stuff. So I'll be curious to see what in 4 years, let's call it 2 years, just for fun, actually happens. But, I know, and I feel like that song, it's interesting that that's one of our songs to go viral and got just unbelievable hate mail,
of course
as you'd expect.
Means you're doing something right usually.
If
they all love you, if they all hate you, you're not
so
doing it right.
Boring though. I mean, it's the same comment over and over. So but
put them on blast. What are these what are their handles?
Actually, the reason we wrote that song is because of, I think I say it in the beginning of the song, is that
maybe
I don't on the CD.
You give a statistic of some sort.
The reason I wrote that song is because I wrote a blog for Huffington Post about my cousin's gay marriage, and called Gay Means Happy, and it got, it went a little viral, and then it got all these comments, both half good, half horrible. So one of these just god-awful shithead comments, homophobic comments. what I was up, and I went to I wanted to see like who would write this, like what kind of person. So I go follow him back to his blog, and of course there's no photo of him because he's totally chicken shit anonymous. So the photo of this totally homophobic guy was a photo of a Greek Roman statue of two naked guys wrestling, and so my husband were like, hate the gays.
There's some latent homosexual.
Just a big fan of Greco-Roman sculpture, you know. Yeah. So that's when we wrote this song about that.
I've definitely found that, like, you know, the people that are the like we obviously we post stuff all online all the time about stories and whatever, and the people that always hate us the most or give us the most shit, it's always people that I don't want to say are disenfranchised, but it's always like this guy who like, you go to their Twitter feed and it's always just them trying to pick a fight with somebody. It's like literally, it's like all like, it's no original thought.
Right.
They, sometimes it's not even a photo. It's like the little Twitter egg.
Yeah, yeah. Right. No. Oh, I know. That's you know when you see that.
You look, you see the egg. It's like, all right, dude. Like, I got nothing for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
I, like, so I've also found that like not feeding the trolls definitely helps the trolls go away.
Yeah, yeah.
And we also try to be very positive on the website too.
So. We wrote a song called "Don't Hit Reply."
And
it's about probably, all the things you want to say. Don't do it. You know, and it's tempting. I've done it a couple times. And I've regretted it every single time.
Sometimes it's just the urge. It's a human nature thing. It gets you and you're just like, I got to do it. But it's always against your better judgment.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I just feel like, but I feel like some of these people, like, I look at the people on Facebook who talk about shitty things, and it's like, I'm going to go back to your Facebook page, and it's like, you have a wife and a child. Like, what is wrong with you?
Right, right. And a daughter often, too.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what's
terrible.
So weird to me.
Yeah, it's
such
unbelievable.
Such a disconnect.
It's unbelievable.
Well, it's just the anonymity. I mean, it's just...
It is the anonymity.
I mean, what's just... now I sound really old. What's destroying our nation is the
it's
anonymity.
It's eroding the fabric of our life. <America. laughs>
Yeah.
So I mean, so okay. So what else do you cover on this record? You cover latent homosexuality. You cover feminism.
I guess environment.
You cover the environment. You cover Nazis getting all the pussy.
Yes. Okay. I did not put that one first on there. Although we contemplated it. So that song is about Soren and I saw my husband Soren, who writes with me. We saw some graffiti on a outhouse wall. Actually, it was like a porta potty thing at a festival that said Nazis get all the pussy. And so I'm standing there like reading this. I don't pee standing up. I just meant afterwards I was standing there just to clarify.
I didn't make that
and assumption. I was trying to unpack it and I'm like, what is this? And so basically the song is unpacking the whole thing. And my very good friend Kelly O'Coin, who's on The Americans and Billions, he's in it as Hitler, is in the music video. I don't know if you've seen the video.
I haven't seen the video. I've only heard the song.
Yeah, that one. He was the day we posted. I remember we posted the video and he texted us, my career's over. and that was just such a totally unbelievably weird thing. But what was crazy is we did this song before Trump.
Yeah.
And all the sort of fascist-y comparisons and stuff. And now it's a little more relevant. But that's not actually really what it's about. It's really just talking about the idea that the is there something attractive about these horrible people in power that abuse people? You know, anyway.
I guess.
You're just going to have to hear it. I can't really recreate it without the...
It was just funny because I'm reading the track listing. I'm like, oh, I have to listen to that. I was like, I have no idea what this is going to be about, but I have to listen to it. And then, when I initially saw it, I thought it might have been, I don't know, like, I was like, maybe she's going from the stance of a man in uniform?
Yeah, I'm going to let your listeners listen to it. I don't think I can wrap it up, because it goes places, as you say.
It does. So there is a tonal shift in the record, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like the first, I'd say like half, three quarters of the record, it's like you almost wrote pre-election, and then the other half.
Oh, that's
post-election.
Interesting.
I got that vibe.
No,
least.
It's actually all pre-election.
Okay.
So because it came out, we just went into editing like minutes after the election. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. The aliens one is the only one that made it.
Okay.
In.
Okay.
And the song about moving to Tahiti because of Trump.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, and those
sorry,
are,
you're
and
right.
On the
okay,
tail end of the
two.
Record. So it does feel there's like there's two. Like a, it does feel like there's a shift. It's like, oh, the record's not closed yet. Got to throw a few
yeah,
of these songs in.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what happened. And I had a live performance, as I said, 7 days after the election. That's our time of year when we always record. Mm-hmm. So we did the live recordings of that with tear-stained faces and Yeah. And there's some personal ones on there too. There's a song and there's like a little bit, a couple of sad songs. They're not sad songs. They're trying to be funny, but they have like a
sad
element.
Undertone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no, that's not really a sad one. I was going to say Men Over 40, but no, that's not sad.
Sad to Men Over 40. it's about in praise of Men Over 40.
It is very
40.
Much in praise of Men Over 40 because they don't take you to shitty movies like the Fast and the Furious movies. Right.
My favorite line in that is the Ann Coulter one where in Men Over 40, if they think Ann Coulter looks hot in those sleeveless black dresses, they keep it to themselves because they're not idiots. and that's the one that a lot of people come on. They're like, okay, thank you for the advice. But I was thinking of like beef jerky kiosk guy or something.
That was actually one I was going for too. Because again, like I started the album by clicking on the titles that just kind of popped out to me. And you know, and it's basically about you trying to find a quiet space to reflect. And you meet
someone else.
You meet someone else doing the same thing, and you're like, "Oh, air traffic controller, pilot. What's he got going? No, I'm just sold the beef jerky."
Right, right. And he's completely stressed out from his job. It was so upsetting. I was just like, "No, no, no, not you too." Like, what is left? What job is left that's not stressful in modern America? I mean,
I don't know.
Retirement's stressful for people.
I mean, sitting at home writing a fake news website?
But no, that's...
I don't
is
know.
That you?
No. Oh, man, like, I've heard stories like these guys make like $30,000 a
month
off of that.
But
stuff,
I think any of those things involved with media is so stressful.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's... You're timing it. Fuck the fake news people. But like, even for you and me, like, we're social media, we're trying to get stuff out. We're trying to be poignant. And make sure that our stuff's still relevant. I mean, I'm rewriting constantly as stand-up comics do it, but it's a little bit hard with a song because it rhymed. God damn it, I have to try again. Update to Trump. I know all the rhymes that are things that rhyme with Trump.
Dump.
Hump.
Hump.
Pump.
Pump.
Forrest Gump.
Gump.
Yeah, then we get a little more creative. But
I got nothing else.
Schlump.
Schlump. It's not a bad one.
Kerplunk. No, that's just no.
Kerplunk.
Slant run.
I like schlump. It's not bad. All right, we got. I'm just trying to think. Like, what else we got here?
I've just stopped your whole audience.
No,
too.
No, it's totally
they're
fine.
All like, wait a minute. You go to Wiki Rhymer and you look.
Is that a thing?
That's a thing.
I did not know this.
Oh, there's all kinds of online rhyming things. It's when you get totally stumped, and you're like, stumped.
Stump. I know that. I know there's like a rhyming dictionary. I've seen.
I have the paper ones too from back in the day, but I have moved up to because I write on airplanes and I write in my office and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. How often do you travel? So
I travel quite a bit. Yeah, because you know the thing is, I don't play in New York that much. But segue, we just have our Broad Comedy is named my troupe. We have our off Broadway debut.
When?
In April.
Nice.
At the Soho Playhouse.
Oh, that's great.
April 2021-22. I'm so excited, and hopefully we'll have a longer run after that.
So let's dive into Broad Comedy.
Sure.
That's obviously, like, it's a huge part of your life, obviously.
It's more fun than airplane jokes that we were headed towards.
And rhyming Trump words. So, Broad Comedy, how did it start?
Yeah.
And
Bush came into office in about 2 days later.
Oh, that far back. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Oh, we've been around 17 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I did not know that. Okay.
So Soren and I started this company of women to sort of tackle women's issues. I used to run a women's theater festival. Like, I do a lot of chick shit. So it was kind of an obvious move. And I wanted to do something that was still theater. Like, it hadn't even occurred to me to be doing comedy. So we did that in our theater company. And then I started writing solo songs in between the sketch numbers are big musical numbers, so the girls could go backstage and get changed.
Yeah.
So it was like filler. Okay. And then those started being kind of the more popular part, not more, but as popular part of the show. So I pilfered those and took them and put them into a solo show.
Gotcha.
So for the last 8 years, I've been touring around the world-ish to English-speaking countries only, because it's comedy, doing the solo show. But then Broad Comedy has simultaneously been touring around a lot. And we make a lot of videos on so they're all on YouTube at Broad Comedy Channel. But and so it just has changed. I mean, during Obama, we had a lot to still say, but it was just very different. In some ways, it freed us up to talk more about like the environment or some things that we either think he wasn't moving enough on or now I'm still wrestling with what where our focus is going to be now. Yeah. You know?
Well, there's a lot.
And there's so much.
And it sounds like a lot of your material and your inspiration, it's almost like a direct reflection of what's happening politically.
Yes, and thank you. And the song, like, we have a song called I Ain't Funding That Shit.
Yeah.
And it was about the Tea Party.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, it just came back.
Yeah, it could be about the wall. It could be about anything.
Yeah, exactly. But it's basically about, you know, alt-right, or it's not, it's still just about the conservative movement. But yeah, it's a little depressing how much of our stuff is still relevant 8 years later.
I mean, 8 years. I mean, you look at, I mean, the feminist argument's been happening for decades now. So it's unbelievable. It's
like, I'm hitting myself against the microphone, but it's got a soft, squishy thing on.
And when there was the Women's March, you know, the day after the election, like, there's, I remember a photo very vividly of an elderly woman with a poster that said, literally, I can't believe I still have to protest.
Yes, oh, I love that picture. It's a great picture. Yeah, it's a great one,
And it's absolutely true. It's like, I feel like for every step forward, there's just a couple steps back. And, like, every election cycle, it's like genitals, the environment, and, like, abortion or, like, it's gun control. Like, it's, like, the same
four or five issues. Everything that's affecting the black community and minorities in general with police violence and immigration. I mean, it's so unbelievable that we're just back here.
It's crazy.
I feel like if you just had, like, a little drone go over every podcast in America that had liberal people in it, that's all we're saying is, I can't believe. We're all saying it, like, at the same second.
Well, I mean, it's true. I mean, you know, just there's, I mean, I also feel like there's definitely, now, I don't want to discredit people that actually voted pro-Trump, because I definitely know plenty of that voted Trump. I know those people, and I know they're not racist people or, like, you know, but I also know that some of these people just, it's not their world. You know, they don't live in areas that are affected by, you know, certain races or certain problems or certain whatever. So they're just disconnected from it. But I've always said to many people, I'm like, the easiest way to get over a lot of this stuff is just, like, go live in Brooklyn for a couple months. Like, I'm dead serious, though. But, like, what I mean by that is, like, 160-some languages are spoken in Brooklyn alone.
Yeah.
You're literally, every walk of life is there from every race, every ethnicity.
Plus, you have de Blasio and everybody's saying, like, okay, this shit's not going to affect you. We're going to make sure. I mean, I don't know if it'll actually work, but
it's just, like, just go live in one of those places. Yeah. And all of a sudden, like, some of this bullshit that you've been hanging on to for whatever reason. Maybe maybe you learned it from your parents. Maybe you learned it from your environment, or whatever. It's just like, that's
right.
You see these protests and people are talking, and there's, like, when the immigration ban came out, and we're getting a little political here, but that's totally fine by me. But, like, when the immigration ban came out, you have people in Boston are protesting the immigration ban a block from where the explosion was during the marathon. Same thing in New York, a couple blocks from, like, World Trade Center. It's like, all right, well, there's people that live in these communities that are saying this shit's is not the way. Maybe you should listen to those people.
Yeah.
Because those people clearly know what's going on because they were there when all the thick of it happened. I don't know. Maybe let those people, like, have a bigger say in some of this decision making and so I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
So if it affects the farmland, let the farmland kind of, like, weigh in on what the best. I don't know. But that's also, that's more of a states' rights conversation and all that kind of stuff, I guess.
Well, it's interesting too, because I do travel around the country and to be honest, it's like 85% above the Mason-Dixon line, but in terms of where we go. But I was in Birmingham 7 days before the election, and I had just gotten, so this is an example of the insidiousness of Fox News and Breitbart, right?
Yeah.
So I was at the museum, the Civil Rights Museum, which is amazing. If you ever, it's worth actually just simply going to Alabama for.
I've been there to Birmingham one time. It's the Sloss Furnace, the old furnace. They were having a festival out there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a couple years back.
That is a cool thing.
Yeah.
So I was doing a Planned Parenthood fundraiser.
Okay.
So I had all the liberals in one room of Birmingham. But I had just left the museum and I got in an Uber. Very nice Uber driver, black gentleman, who I had Uber conversations, like, the whole time I was there, I was proselytizing. But anyway, and I said, so are you voting? I'm, like, still chipper, right?
Yeah.
This is 7 days before the election.
Yeah.
I'm still in a good mood. And he said, oh, is that next week? Okay. That was number one. And I about fell out of my seat. And then I said, yep, it's Tuesday or whatever, you know. And then I said, and he said, yeah, I don't really vote. And I said, and I couldn't help myself. I said, dude, I just got out of a museum where everyone died to get the right to vote.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand this, obviously, as a woman, too. It's the same situation, story. And then, but then, you know, I'm the asshole person, reprimanding this nice guy. And then I said, And then I said something else about, okay. So here's a funny moment I wish someone had on film. How do you talk to a total stranger in an Uber about pussy grabbing? So yeah. I said something like, you know, if euphemistic, like, so have you read all this stuff about Trump and the, you know, bothering women or something? He's like, what are you talking about? And I said, you know, grabbing. Like, I figured I wasn't going to say pussy to this guy, but I said grabbing.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what I was talking about. Literally. So he doesn't read the news. You know, he doesn't see, or he sees Fox or whatever. And 87% of Alabama went to Trump. And I literally never saw anything but Fox News on the entire time I was there. And I don't blame these guys. And then just to totally make another stupid story, I was in another Uber with a woman who was, and there's, you know, obviously the abortion issue is huge.
Yeah,
and that's all they hear about Planned Parenthood. I'm in the car with her. First of all, it was a her, which was startling as for Uber in Alabama. And I said, I'm doing Planned Parenthood thing. And she kind of gives me a funny look. And I said, yeah, we're raising money for free breast cancer screening. Because I'm like, and she said, oh, I'm a survivor. Then we have a half hour conversation, literally sitting in her car. I'd already arrived at my place about this and like turned her mind around about Planned Parenthood. But it was impossible to get through to her through the news.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is that.
That was long winded. Sorry.
No, but it makes total it makes total sense. I do like, again, I feel like access is half the problem in a lot of these situations.
Yeah, it's getting worse and worse and worse.
It's access to information. It's access to the right information.
Yeah.
It's access to people and knowing different ethnicities, different races, different religion practices, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And there's always like the, oh, well I remember there's a newscaster. I want to say it's down in Alabama, maybe North Carolina, who always kind of signs off as newscast. He's an old white guy, looks like your stereotypical Republican. And he always talks about like race issues and he's very like very liberal leaning. but it's funny because he talks about how his father, was not a fan of black folks, but the black folks he knew were awesome. And his whole thing is like, well, you know, it's just lack of knowledge of what's going on. So I do think that's a lot
of
it.
Here's where Kami comes back in to save the world.
Yeah, totally.
Which is,
bring it back.
Right. When I was down there, I said to, and you know, the Planned Parenthood supporters down there were predominantly white at this event because it, again, these two communities do not mix enough.
Yeah.
And the woman who was the planning manager and I afterwards had a drink and we were talking about this problem. And she said, and so I suggested bringing down four only African American women comics to come do an event for them just simply to do outreach, period. Like not even a night of diverse blah, 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 but just so that those women can see their sisters on stage and hear what they're talking about in support of Planned Parenthood. So I hope that they're going to, it sounds like they may do something like that, but I thought, that's a place where you get your girlfriends out, you're going night out, it's a night of comedy, and even if you don't know what you're getting into, you end up hearing this stuff from, you know, liberal comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really do feel like comics can do a lot of really good. It's weird because like there's people that love the art form and they're like, oh, it's a this, that, or the other thing, and there's other people who are just like, I want to tell dick and fart jokes.
Right.
And I think there's a place for all of it. But I think the comedians that are doing the most interesting work are the ones you can name the same ones I can name. It's like your Carlins of the world and you know who are just like, hey, a little bit quick, different way of looking at the world and a different way. And it's like, oh, I'm on a completely different trajectory about that kind of stuff, too. I don't know how many people on this planet I come across on a daily basis that are sharing something from Bill Hicks or George Carlin about something political. It's crazy how it works. And I mean, have you always been political? Like, it just.
I come from a newspaper family.
That's right.
And my mother was a columnist. Yeah. Her name's Ellen Goodman, and she was a. I'm proud of her. She was a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Boston Globe, Washington Post Syndicate. And she, so the household was just very newsy politically. Mm-hmm. And it was osmosis, right? So I think kind of what I'm doing is a feminist column on stage in a way, you know?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. Yeah.
the speaking version of the column, basically. Right. Some sort. That's cool. That's very, very cool.
Or the singing version, I guess.
Oh, the singing version. I'm sorry. Yes, the singing version of it. Yes. Okay, so we got off track. Broad comedy.
Yes.
So we'll bring it back to broad.
This is my life. I can't stay on.
I do the same thing all the time. I'm just
broad comedy. Yes. Yep. So we tour all around the country. Okay. We do a lot of fundraisers for women's health and other causes. And we've been performing in New York a bit as well, and we just, you know, yeah, so we're gonna have this little off-Broadway run.
Now correct me if I'm wrong, did some of the broad comedy songs make it through the album?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But the first one that pops in my head is the one about boobs look funny while having sex.
That one.
I'm assuming that's a broad comedy.
That is. Well, you can tell just if there's more than one singer.
Yes. Okay.
So probably gay is also because I have the harmonies of the other
women. That's right. Yeah.
And then what else is on here? I ain't funding that shit is my husband.
Yeah.
On there from now, our video.
Does your husband co-writes a lot of the broad comedy stuff
We co-write absolutely everything together.
Okay.
And I direct the broads about halfway, and then once I'm up on stage off book with my lines memorized, then he comes in because I can't see what I'm doing anymore, and he's really, really good. And that way we have a fresh eye.
Okay.
And then he undoes half the things I did.
no, this is wrong. Let's fix this.
And then especially with the broads, it's really fun. And then It's All Gonna Be Okay is another song on there, which is the fake sort of 60s band singing everything's fine.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. Don't worry about it. With the environment and the plastic.
If I were to classify what you do right now, I would put you in the same vein as Inside Amy Schumer does, Samantha Bee.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. Is that fair to make that?
Oh god, yeah, I love that. Well, somebody said if Amy Schumer and Sam B had a baby.
Right. There's a quote.
Yes.
Yeah, Bo Burnham's in that quote somewhere,
and,
too.
And hired Bo Burnham, or Tim Minchin, as a Manny. Yeah.
That's what
they've
it
said
was,
both
yeah.
ways. Yeah, yeah. You get broad comedy.
I mean, it definitely makes everything I've heard and everything I've experienced, it seems very much so. So now, when the songwriting process, are there songs where you're like, okay, this is, I'm going to give this one to broad comedy?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. So generally, the things that feel like a big group number.
Yeah.
I like to do there, but I've done all of the raps that broads have done by myself in my solo show because they transfer really easily. Cause it's really just like one line at a time. We just share it and we do big dance numbers. I take out the dance part. We have a song called
Replace It with Laying on the Piano.
Right.
It behind your back.
On my first album, I think I had the song MILF, was on there, and that's a big group number with a giant dance with strollers. And then I do that myself live as well. But how do I decide? So if it's on piano, it's me. And and that's a funny question. I don't know. I think because I'm a theater person, I picture it first. So I either picture something active, more active, like a dancey dance. And if I picture it kind of sitting at a piano telling the audience a story, a personal thing, or talking about something where there's no fourth wall, I'm just talking to the audience, then it's a solo song. But we have started one way and switched.
Okay.
That has happened. Not that often. I mean, now it's been 17 years. So we kind of hit things right on the first try now, which is nice. That's a lot less work.
So how would you rank your dance skills?
My dance skills?
Yeah.
I was a musical theater dancer for a long
dancer.
Time.
I didn't know you were a dancer.
But at 48, I'm actually, it's funny because now at this age, I'll get injured.
Yeah.
Like I had an impinged right shoulder. So we switched everything to the left side, and I'll walk into rehearsal and I'm like, guys, I need someone else to do the splits on that.
Can I call in the replay?
Exactly.
What do they do in baseball? So like that, call on the righty or the lefty?
Yep.
That's great. So let's say that you get to map out your entire career, the trajectory, where you start. Well, obviously where you started, but like where you're ending. Is there an ultimate goal where you want to be?
That's what I think Halfway Closer to Dead's about, is I'm kind of there. So I don't really pay attention too much to like ultimate goals. Like I want to have my own show before I die on TV or something like that. It's just sort of not interesting to spend a lot of energy living there. So it's more like I like what I'm doing. I'd like to spend less time on administration and producing and more time performing. Some weeks I say that, and then when I get back from tour, I'm like, oh my God, all I want to do is sit in my office for 3 weeks. I don't know. I'm a little moody. But I guess my husband is having wonderful success at the moment, which I can't even talk about yet, but with a TV show that he's got an incredible executive producer on. We just found out last night.
Is it a new show?
It is a new show that is
I'm trying to guess. I'm trying to think.
Oh, no. Nobody knows about it yet.
I know, but I don't know. Like,
So it's that kind of thing that's like, oh, icing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he obviously spent a lot of time working on writing it, but we have 12 projects going on. We've written children's books. funny children's books together. I have an improv book. I do keynote speeches. I do workshops using improv in everyday life. And really? So there's just a lot of... And we also own a theater camp with 300 kids in the summer. So it's like...
Now, where's home base for you for all this? Is it New York?
Well, we live here. Yeah, in Brooklyn. Okay. Park Slope with all the other parents.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that. That's right.
Yeah, you'll live there someday too.
I don't think so.
Just kidding.
I like yards where my dogs can run.
Yeah.
I'm a Jersey guy, so that's
okay. That's different.
Yeah.
And then we have a summer home in Montana where we run this camp.
Okay.
And that's kind of grounding, you know. So you get out of New York in the summer, which is not a bad thing.
No.
And we get back to what I love about it is we get to, here's this little kid in front of you.
Yeah.
They have this insecurity or this problem where they don't think they're creative. 4 weeks later, they're so proud of themselves. And that is such a different thing than going up all day long in front of an audience and performing. I mean, I'm trying to help the world by performing, but it's so indirect, right? Because as an artist, I hate the word artist, but as an artist,
you're an artist. It's okay to say.
As a comedian, you go out and you try to, if you're political, you try to inspire the audience to go change the world, right? Mm-hmm. And you kind of maybe never actually see an effect.
Yeah.
So then to go to this camp, you're like, oh my God, this little kid's just like growing and I can see it in front of me. Selfishly, it's really satisfying.
So where do these kids come from? Is it
they're
all around?
They're local, yeah.
They're local kids. Yeah. And are they problem youth or are they just...
Sometimes, some of them. And we've got some disabilities.
Gotcha.
But it's just it's open to the whole population.
And you just teach them ranching?
No, improv.
Oh.
I'm sorry, comedy.
Well, because you
theater.
Said, when you
did
mentioned...
I, what did I say?
No,
it's a
you know
theater
what?
Camp.
For some reason, when you mentioned Montana...
Right.
I got the... image of like you're next to
we
Ted
do Oklahoma
Turner's,
the musical
you're next to,
all
like,
the
Ted
time.
Turner's Buffalo Farm.
yes. Well, you're right about that, and some of these kids are from ranching families, but no, we
I don't
make
know
theater
I
geeks
that.
Out of them.
Oh, okay,
and
that's
then
good.
They're, you know,
that's totally fine. I was not a theater geek. I was a stage crew guy.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we did a, and I joined because a girl I was dating at the time had one of the leads in what was it? It wasn't Oliver Twist. It was Fiddler on the Roof.
Yes.
She played Zytel.
Oh, God. That's a classic story.
Classic. But so it's my...
Nothing sexier than Zytel.
Nothing sexier than Zytel. But it was my job to put the fiddler on the roof.
Oh, nice.
During the one or two.
Oh, my God.
The one or two. And during dress rehearsal...
Have him sign the waiver.
Yeah, her name was Becca. She
I assumed it was a dude.
I don't know.
Terrible. My son would have called me out on that. Okay.
She was
female
the fiddler.
Fiddler.
She was the fiddler. And I remember not knowing when she was on the supposed to be on the roof. So I put her up there probably more times than I had to during dress rehearsal. And all I would hear is the director screaming, "Why is the fiddler on the roof?"
Which is the line.
It's the movie. They just weren't supposed to be on the roof at the time.
That's awesome.
And I would just hear her screaming from outside. And I'd be in the back. I'm like, I don't know if she got up there. I wouldn't fess up to it at all.
The most existential question of all musical theater.
Yeah, she would scream it all the time. So I always did grip crew or stage crew or something like that. And we did Oliver Twist, and I wasn't responsible for moving. This is like high school nightmare stuff,
right.
You know. I was responsible for moving one of the house props.
Yeah,
he was doing it. I don't know why I remember this, but he was singing "Who Will Buy." You know, where they did the whole, I don't know if you're familiar with the Oliver Twist musical, but...
Not in Fiddler, he didn't sing that. Okay, I'm with you.
We're in Oliver Twist. We've moved from Fiddler, we're now in Oliver Twist.
Yes, of course I know all these songs.
So they're doing the Who Will Buy, and everyone's out in the streets singing, and then like Oliver appears in a window and sings Who Will Buy. And I had to move this whole building. And I moved this building, and it snagged one of the cords. So like I'd like ruin the sound for the second half of the play. And it was just like...
No, it's such a loveless... what's the word? That's not the right word. Thankless.
Thankless job, yeah.
It's terrible. I always do shout outs to tech people. I did a whole column for HuffPo on tech people.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, I mean, I was Anita in West Side Story in sixth grade, and it changed my life, not just because I got a great part, but because my sixth grade teacher, Carolyn Coverdale, who's an amazing woman,
mm-hmm.
Did a quote unquote colorblind production.
Okay,
this is 19.
And it's West Side Story. How does that, isn't that the one of the main themes
right?
of West Side Story?
So that was super unique thing for anyone to ever do. So I was Anita, Jew, and my best friends were like Josh was a jet, and he was black, and you know it was
Jets and the Sharks, yeah.
I mean, we talk about that to this day. Like, how did she get away with it and do it. And this is during busing in Boston.
Yeah.
In the late 70s, right? Oh, wow. So it was just really unique. But she made us talk about it. My point is that she showed us art as activism. And, and so we all talked about race issues for, 8 weeks of working on this show, too. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a big reason for her to do it that way, so issues would come up. So we talk about it.
Yeah.
That's pretty great. Interesting, yeah.
And it's framed almost in a way where it's a secondary thing that you're learning, so like it doesn't irk the administration.
Exactly.
But like you gotta give a lot of credit to the people who've kind of trailblazed in this type of stuff, where it's like some of these things that you're talking about. You know, I just remember early on being introduced to or just knowing that, you know, gay people were cool, and it was just a fine thing. And just, I don't know how it got put into
theater.
My brain. It probably was because of theater. I mean, I mean, I never really considered myself like a theater kid, but I did all the stage production for like my junior and senior year of high school.
Yeah. That's what Soren did too.
But like, it gets kind of like built into you, and it's just you don't even realize it. And
right,
then all of a sudden,
exactly.
You're just like, I have literally no problem with any
of this.
That's
why I just wish we could have amnesia for one generation. You wake up and nobody notices any of these differences or has any of the
again,
problems.
But I think it goes back to access. Like, you have access to this stuff or to these groups or to see people and to meet people and talk with them on a daily basis, you realize they have the same problems that you have. It's it's how do I pay this? How do I get? How do I eat? How do I live and love
and
kids? It's all the same people have the same problems. Right. Like everyone doesn't want their kid to grow up like in a shitty place, and everyone wants to be able to kind of live and just do what they want to do.
Yep.
So
yep.
I think access is a big part of it. So I don't know.
I just don't know how we're going to solve that with the way media is going.
The real question is, why is the fiddler on
the
roof?
Now there's a lot of answers to that.
That's what it all comes down to. I don't know. Well, Katie, it's been awesome. It's been about an hour. We've been talking for about an hour. Yeah, we definitely very very easily could. So
now we have to plug shit.
Let's wrap it up. Let's plug some stuff.
Right.
Where can people find you online?
Okay, well, katiegoodman.com is just everything's there. But the CD's on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And you just type in Katie Goodman. It's KATIE Goodman.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
People spell it wrong.
Yeah, halfway closer to death.
Dead.
I just picture, it's just you. You're literally wearing all leather. You got boots that like have heels on them, like this big, and you're swinging a sword.
Yeah.
It's pretty badass, I gotta say.
Thanks.
It is. It very much is. So, socials, are you on there?
Yeah,
anywhere?
Yeah, of course. At Katie Goodman on Twitter.
Okay.
At the Katie Goodman on Instagram. I didn't get there fast enough.
It when that happens.
The worst one is Facebook is Katie Goodman Comedian.
Oh.
Not the Cupcake Chef.
There's a cupcake chef.
Or the sheet cheerleader. There's several. And they're all really, really cute and young.
there's a couple other Matt Kleinschmidt's and I kind of...
Really?
Yeah. Kleinschmidt's a very unique kind of last name.
Yeah.
It's German meaning Little Smith. but there's a couple in the Midwest, and since the days of Friendster, I found these guys and friended them on social media. So I've never met them, never talked to any of them. We're just friends on social media because we have the same name. So I don't know.
And then come see my I'll get you free tickets, but none of y'all. Sorry.
Sorry, guys.
The Soho Playhouse, April 2021-22.
That's great.
Comedy.
We'll put up a link for all the stuff on the story and whatnot too. And you also mentioned that we can run a contest to give away a copy of the album too.
Yes. Oh, shall I say that, or we'll put it?
We'll put it on the website. Okay. I don't want to inundate your text message.
Okay.
system. I'm assuming the text message goes to your phone.
No. It's a program, and then we pick one winner. But it's a way for us to get emails so we can tell you about when the new videos are up and stuff like that too.
Gotcha. Very cool.
Yeah.
Katie Goodman, it's been a total blast.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on the Laugh Button podcast. We'll see you later.
Bye.
All right. Bye. And that will do it for our episode of the Laugh Button podcast with Katie Goodman. Super interesting conversation. I want to thank Katie for coming in, taking time, sitting down, talking about everything. We're going to put a bunch of links up on the website in the show notes to all the stuff she talked about. We're actually going to put up a little contest information on how you can enter to win a copy of her record, which I definitely recommend you checking out. Social media, that is all our handle on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's all the Laugh Button, at the Laugh Button. Go to thelaughbutton.com for all the information situation. We put up a bunch of new trailers. Got a new trailer for Jim Norton's special, which comes out next week. We put up the trailer for the new movie Rough Night, which features Alana from Broad City. It features Scarlett Johansson. It features Kate McKinnon. It's got all these great comedic actresses doing. It's kind of a looks like a mix between like Very Bad Things meets Broad City meets. A little bit of Porky's, a little bit of that kind of stuff, a little bit of Bridesmaids element to it, too. So that's actually really super cool. So watch that trailer. We got that up. We also have the new season of Reviewers coming back with Andy Daly. We got dates about the new Chris Gethard special. We have information about the new Chris Hardwick tour, the ID10 tour, not tour, but festival he's doing called the ID10T Festival. I mean, Letterman was around this week. Leno was around this week. It was like the resurgence of the new late night guys coming back this week, just kind of talking about stuff. We have all that rundown. Pete Davidson's really heartfelt struggle with addiction was actually covered this week too. We also covered the new AV Club's comedy festival. There's just so much stuff to go on the laughbutton.com. So definitely go to laughbutton.com and read it all. Check it out and get your digestion, your daily dose. Follow us on the socials at the Laugh Button, especially if you want to see what we're doing down in Austin in real time. We're going to have some photos up there, some videos, all that kind of stuff. We have a lot of really great South by Southwest stuff planned for you. So we'll see you on the other side when we come back of Austin. By the time you listen to the next podcast, we will have already gone to Austin and done a bunch of crazy stuff from South by Southwest, and we'll have the full recap and rundown for you guys all. So we're super excited about that. So enjoy your weekend, everybody. That'll do it for this episode of the Laugh Button Podcast. Signing off. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.